This is Suzanne Reports, the first session, Thursday, the 1st of August, 71. Channel 1 over. This is Channel 1 over. And Suzanne Reports, the first session, Thursday, the 5th of August, 71. Suzanne Reports, the first session, Thursday, the 5th of August, 71. Now, on this reel, there's only Channel 1 right and Channel 1 over. So far, there's nothing on the Channel 2s.
I'm not in a hurry. I just can wait till it goes back to school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Figure as long as I'm here.
No luck?
That was Lois.
Lois?
Dixon, she was thinking. I called her after the nurse was. She had all sorts of notions of what to do.
She could do herself.
She had a scissor, she could, she said.
I saw Mr. Weaver the other day on the way home. He was getting a soft drink at the truck stop.
Oh.
So I just stopped and got one too. I was thirsty. I just said, you know, I'd drop by his house, you know, to see if he was there. Saw his car out here. He said nobody had been by to see him that weekend. And he'd just been driving around charging his battery down the Macintosh. And somehow I mentioned that we'd been to the reunion, you know, and he's just kind of lights up. He says, "Oh, I bet that was fun." He says, "Those reunions are not, you know."
Well,
well,
that'd be just
yeah,
me, but
yeah. So I thought, you know, if he comes over today, I could tell him that they played baseball at the reunion, and he used to play around here in Micanopy.
Yes.
And I was thinking maybe he might talk about Jimmy Means a little bit, because I noticed on your notes you said that Jimmy Means played baseball, too.
You won't talk about people.
Yeah, that's right. I think we might get the baseball games, though.
You have to switch him, maneuver him into it, and then he does it reluctantly.
Well, we were standing there about 15 minutes. I know he waved at least three cars that went by, the people in it. You know, just, hey. Another one after a while, another one come by, hey. Jack Heron and his wife went by. Hey. He says, "That's Jack Heron and his wife."
Yeah.
And then he told me one of his fur trapping stories, where some fella, friend of his, wanted to buy some cedar wood and had heard of a man in Jacksonville that sold it. No, he wanted to sell the cedar wood and he heard of a man in Jacksonville that bought it and would, you know, use it.
You get in this position, you see, and you're unmaneuverable.
Okay.
You're just like a stump.
I'm watching.
Yeah, but you can't take part, you see.
Okay.
just uncross your legs, Faye, and get over there where you can reach it. Always do that. Last night with Cookie, you did the same thing. It's inevitable.
Well, I wasn't participating. I was listening.
It doesn't matter, Faye. You always participate.
Okay.
You don't have to look so awkward. That's always domestic life.
No. Just that it happens so often. Some folks don't learn.
Anyway, his friend wanted him to come down there and stay overnight, and they'd leave at 4 in the morning for Jacksonville. Well, Mr. Weaver said he couldn't come then, so he'd drive over. So he drove over and met the man at 4 at his house, and his wife was just furious. You got him over here at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you don't even know the man's name? He said all he knew was there's a fellow in Jacksonville. But he figured, not Mr. Weaver, but the other man, that he and Mr. Weaver had had so much practice hunting up people out in the woods and all, that they wouldn't have any trouble in a city. All they'd have to do was ask. So they got in their car and they drove over to Jacksonville, and Mr. Weaver said, well, let's stop at a barber shop. You know, barbers know people. So they stopped in the barber shop, and he went in and went to the last chair. And he said the owner of the shop always has the last chair. And he asked the guy if he knew anybody who bought cedar wood. He said, yes, I do. I buy it. So he got the right man on the first try. That's about all that came out. We just were there a few minutes.
Didn't have lunch?
No, this was late. They close at 2 over there. And he just stopped for a cold drink.
Oh, he was in his car.
Yeah, he's in his car. See, he'd let the battery go down. He'd forgotten something about turning the key so it wouldn't keep the battery on.
Yeah.
And it ran it down, so he was driving around to Macintosh.
You tell him
back.
I've got a much cheaper way than that. I've got that little battery charger. And it doesn't use any electricity. It just charges that battery.
That's right. He could just come over here.
Yeah.
He couldn't come over here. He didn't have a car to get over. He couldn't find anybody with jumper cable. It was on Saturday.
I had a jumper cable. I got brass jumper cables. Copper jumper cables. He'll have to learn to use a phone. He never telephoned.
Yeah.
He'd go and look and see if people were there. Well, you know, I like that world so well. It's inconvenient, and I can't afford to live in it. I can't live in it, but I like for him to. You haven't run across anybody who around here who's tall like your grandmother, Jim's grandmother.
No. The tallest person I've seen was that Jimmy Means. And he didn't look much taller than Jimmy.
Who is at all like your grandmother?
Who is?
I didn't say she was tall.
Oh, at all. Well, let's see. I was trying to think. I think she gets along pretty good with most anybody.
Yeah.
And I think she and Miss Mary would have a good time together. Because grandmother, you know, they're funny. They go to church. Grandfather does, but grandmother does. But she's not above telling some pretty raw jokes sometimes, you know. And she doesn't do it too often, and she won't do it when there are men around much. Just, you know, the whim of it. And she's got an aunt or somebody who just sits back and just frowns when any of this kind of stuff is going
on. Aunt
Clovis. No, it's not Aunt Clovis. Aunt Clovis is okay. But there's somebody else that there. She says she's real churchy, and when anybody starts talking about, Mabel, who's a friend of hers, works in the hospital. Well, she comes and brings all sorts of stories home about things happening in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you know, some of them are pretty gross. And woman, and they make it, you know, it just gets hilarious sometimes. You know, it's just, I guess it's kind of like Chaucer's stories. They're so horrible, you can't help but just sit there and, you know, just laugh. And grandmother, you know, she knows that they are funny, and she'll laugh, but this other woman just sits back there, and grandmother sat back, and she just frowned, just tightened up her mouth real tight, and just looked as disapproving as she could, you know, to show how this friend of hers acts. But,
you mean she, some of them have survived that churchly influence?
Oh, yeah. You know, they go to church, but like having somebody, a deacon who runs a still, is just right up their line. You know, that would be just the funniest thing in the world.
They go in for that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I can't tell whether Miss Mary disapproves of it or not.
Well, she may disapprove of it, but she'd be kind of dull if you didn't have somebody like
that. That's it, yeah.
Yeah. It's like their friend that they call their $2 friend. He's an alcoholic. But life would be pretty dull in that neighborhood if he went around to pass out and have to go revive or something.
As your grandmother's neighborhood.
Yeah. Because all around there you got families with little children. And all.
They call him their
$2 neighbor because he comes on Thursday for his $2.
Oh, he runs out of money and whiskey.
Yeah. And his wife won't give him the money, so he comes to their house and borrows it.
Yeah.
And gets his bottle and gets drunk. And then Monday morning he comes back and pays him their $2.
Yeah.
And they loan it to him.
Oh, yeah. Regular. And grandmother goes fishing with him. Things like that. And he brings him all sorts of vegetables and things. And they like him. They say he's the nicest soul in the world. He just, there wasn't anything he wouldn't do for somebody. It's just he's a drunkard. But, you know, they don't mind it. They don't sit there and disapprove of it.
He doesn't bother anybody.
No, except his wife, of course.
Sure.
They don't like her, so that's okay. She's unsociable, so grandmother doesn't like her.
They're all stories. Are they all sex?
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Things with the hospital. You see, I haven't heard too much of this because it's just every once in a while that they'll do that, you know, the raw stories. Other times it's just things that are funny, but like that one with the sheriff who arrested that drunk in their yard, and he came around, the guy had gone to the bathroom, you know, he'd just gotten sick, and he just couldn't wait, and the sheriff stepped in it, you know, and he's sitting there just cussing out, that kind of thing, you know. They just
Well, now that's all right.
A lot of it's like that.
Yeah.
Not too much of it has to do with sex, except marriages, wedding nights.
Yeah. Yes, the world is so full of raw stuff, you know. It's shameful not to look at some of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of it, I guess, they have one of grandfather's. I think his uncle's about 90 or so, and View was traveling, and he stayed overnight at their house, and he wasn't 90, he's in his 70s, and he'd just gotten remarried, and they had the two bedrooms and a living room, and View said, well, they fixed up the bed in one of the bedrooms for him, and he says, well, no, I'll sleep on the couch, I don't want to take your bed, and talking to the woman. She says, oh, no. She said, if I slept near, we'd wear out the carpet.
Yeah. see all those.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's
just
amazing how much your grandmother would see if she had a little encouragement.
Yeah.
Somebody to help her with the categories, sort of open them up, or do you think they need opening up?
Not for her, they don't.
She'd probably open up to somebody else's.
I guess so. I expect she, you know, she's kind of, like I say, when she's over it, it just constant. She just keeps everything going, and it doesn't matter what anybody is talking about. She's got something to put in. We were talking about the Hoberts up there and the children smoking. Well, she knew a family that the children cussed. And they were at a funeral. One of the grandchildren was in the war and got killed, and they were having the burial back at home with the salute from the guns and all. And the grandmother was there in a wheelchair, and this little boy, about 7 or so, was running all around and just cutting up. And they had the service, and then they shot off the guns, and it scared the grandmother, and she fell out of her chair. Voices, I mean, goddamn, they didn't shoot grandmother too. So it doesn't matter what, you know, I'm in Georgia, she'll come in with this little boy. I mean, goddamn, they didn't shoot grandma. Of course, grandmother, when she says these things, it just, you know, everybody collapses. Because she knows, I think she knows she's pretty funny.
Well, you know she does. She has a sense of timing and all those
things.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Like Mark Twain.
She's just good at it, you know, just anything. And even when she's talking about the Miss Kitty Sue's arthritis, you know, she doesn't mean it to be funny, but, you know, she'll go along pretty serious for a while. She'll just slip in something about her knee turning blue or something like that, and then she just started laughing. She can't help it. It's about anything.
Now, how is that? She'd be talking about somebody's arthritis?
Well, Miss Kitty Sue's her best friend, and she's got arthritis real bad.
Yeah.
And she'll be talking to Nell about they went to the... Let me see what that was. They went to the doctor. Miss Kitty Sue had to go to the doctor. So she called up grandmother and wanted her to go with her. So they went, and before they went, they stopped and got a hamburger. And they had onions on it. So they thought, well, they better get some Clorets before they went, you know, for their breath. So they sat there in the car eating the Clorets. And when they got out to the doctor, their tongues were green. There they sat, you know, Miss Kitty Sue was in agony with her arthritis. She could sit all in her joints and all. And they're sitting in the doctor's office and looking at all the people, you know, trying to guess what was wrong with them. And grandmother, of course, I can't repeat this, but she goes through the people she saw and what it looked like was wrong with them. And Miss Kitty Sue and she were sitting there, and they looked... They looked okay, you know. Other people looked sick, but they looked all right, you know. And they were just sitting in the office, just talking. You know? Grandmother says what they should have done is just sat there with their mouths open, and people would have known they were sick.
That green tongue.
Now, Suzanne, you never realize that people who see in large part through other people's eyes.
Yeah, I guess they do.
Just like you seeing through grandmother's. I never realized that. Mm-hmm. So one way to see is to learn, is just to listen and get so you can listen. Listen is not, it don't come to you. You got to live around it.
Yeah.
And you can't take it on the weekends. No, I'm just pursuing it now.
Mm-hmm.
As in.
Well, you know, sometimes I'll listen for a while, you know, just and know I'm listening, and then it just kind of drops back. It just at home anyway, it's just too much, and I just kind of, I don't know what it is.
Well, do you think they cut out too occasionally to rest their cells?
Well,
I think they participate and they are right in.
I've never seen grandmother cut out, not on a weekend at home.
Yeah.
Now Jim might, or Barbara, or me, and of course Faye. You know, she's kind of lives in her own little world. But I've never seen grandmother do it. You know, she's just always.
That's just that world, and
mm-hmm.
they want to live in it.
Yeah. Well, her, you know, she sits there, she'll bring peas or lima beans or something over, and she'll sit there and just a mile a minute. Just, she not, doesn't even watch where her hands do, of course. She just reaches in, takes five or six, and undoes them and shells them, puts them in the pan, and the whole time, you know, it's just, she's just being chewing beans, but, you know, it's not. Doesn't interfere with the talk or anything else. And she enjoys doing the beans.
You know, one time when you were over here, that night, Mr. Weaver was cutting my hair and telling you how he cut the preacher's hair that had red hair. And it was an argumentative point because the other barber didn't know how to cut it.
Doing one thing.
Yeah.
He's explaining to you how to cut my hair, and then at the same time explaining how he cut that hair, and what the wrong is, huh?
Yeah.
So there's something there, isn't there? There's a gift of some sort there.
I'll see. But she's done that since she was a child, those beans, sitting up on the porch and shelling peas and beans and talking with her family. And she likes it. You know, that's just, she likes to have a great big huge pot of peas to shell. And Nell sits there and I sit there. And last, when Barbara's there, there's Barbara and Jim and Bob and me and grandmother. She had this great big huge sack of lima beans on the floor, and we were all just kind of in a ring around it, and I just shelling away.
All of you?
All of us. Well, she'd talk.
They all take part?
Now, well, now I was in the kitchen that time, but usually she does it too. Yeah.
Well, you see, you don't just sit there and listen and look on. You shell peas too.
Well, I was. We were all doing it.
Anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywhere. Anything going on.
That's why the kitchen's nice, because there's usually just Nell and me and grandmother. Faye stays away from the kitchen as long as possible. And there's always, they're getting supper or cleaning new potatoes or just all that activity. But it doesn't interfere with anything. And they don't even talk about it too much, you know, what they're doing. Except deciding what they're going to have. But they just, you know, get the supper ready, the meal ready, while they're talking.
Now, her younger son, Bob, has that same touch?
Yeah, he's just always, almost always, he's on about that same level grandmother is. Everything is just a big, kind of, everything can be turned into a joke. Now he doesn't tell stories like she does. He's more, he cuts up more.
Yeah.
You know, and throws in jokes and just quips and kind of witty sometimes. But he doesn't tell the stories like she does.
Because he hasn't seen what she's seen.
Well, I expect not, no.
I just...
You know, he's got the job and two children and a wife that works, and he's got to keep her you're kind of on an even keel. And most of the times I see him, he does. It's not that he talks so much. It's just that he's always joking or doing something silly. He's the one that when we're eating lunch or something. Well, last time grandmother and grandfather brought over peanuts. They boiled peanuts. And Bob must have eaten 5 pounds by himself. You know, just every time you look at him, he'd have 2 handfuls of peanuts. And he'd just go through them just like that. And he was joking about liking the peanuts so much. You know, all day. Anyway, he wasn't going to eat supper. He's going to eat peanuts.
But now, your grandmother doesn't joke like that.
No, not too much like that. She's more, she'll pick up something like Miss Kitty Sue in the doctor's office, or the little boy, or maybe something that Paul, when he first time he went out cast fishing, we warned him and warned him, you hold the net in your teeth, you know, and the other part of the net in the hand, he's swinging out. We warned him and warned him, you know, that to be careful because he's got false teeth. Just jerk him out. Sure enough, he forgot. He just about lost his teeth. But it's that kind of thing. It's not just jokes that she's heard or being cute or cutting up. It's just she's just merry about anything she talks about.
And she could report on antics of her son.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, the other night she used to try to spank him, or punish him in some way. She said she'd just get aggravated with him because he'd tease her. And she'd go to hit him, and he'd grab her arms, her wrists, and just hold her out at arm's length. And he was a big fella at that time, 14, you know, he's pretty tall. And she couldn't get to him. And he's standing there and teasing her, oh, no, Mama, you don't want to spank me. You don't want to spank me, you know. So he'd get her to giggling and laughing, and she couldn't spank him. She could not only reach him, she couldn't stop laughing to do it. And she'd report, you know, on that. That time Jim and I tried to tape him, a lot of that, some of that tape is those kind of things, what her children did, scaring each other. I think the oldest son.
I can see now she tape.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can tape her every day, every once a week. Faye has discovered, you know, that sustained talk, they just, you can't do that much. You see, we're academic, and that's one thing we do, you see, we're most sustained.
Mm-hmm.
If we condense it like that, it tires them, and they won't do it. Miss Bessie doesn't like to come up here, because she says we make her talk. Well, we don't make her talk anymore. She talks down there. But it's a little more sustained.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I'd rather she'd come up here.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Daisy, Faye, I haven't been able to make any sense with Miss Daisy down there at her house. And Faye doesn't make much either. It's just sort of passing it.
Mm-hmm. But she'd talk all day down there.
Yeah.
I could stay down at Daisy's house and we could talk all day and she'd never tire. But about an hour is all she can do up here.
And she knows it.
Well,
now, you don't, there's no one in your family is like the grandmother.
Oh, yeah. Well, my grandmother is. But, and it's not quite. She's... The first thing my mother said when she met Jim's grandmother was how much she was like her mother, my grandmother. It's the same kind of, they're the center of the family, and everybody knows it, and they know why. But my grandmother, she's not like, she'd never tell a rough story.
Yeah.
She's from a very old family in Virginia, and she was brought up, and they had servants and things like that. And they live, as far as I can tell, all her books that she reads are stories about the South, the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, the Southern families, you know, all very romantic historical sort of stuff. And she lives in it a great deal.
Yeah.
But she still, she's always ready to do something. She just loves to go shopping. And she loves just chaos around the house. Just the more people that are there, the better. And it bothers her a little bit now because she's got high blood pressure and all. But it used to be you could have 30 people in that house, and most of them grandchildren, and she was just in her element, you know, just walk around. And my cousin used to do about what Bob used to do with his grandmother. She was 16 and a great big girl. I used to be so jealous because she's about 5'6", I guess, and pretty, not fat or anything, but just big. And she used to get her grandmother, or Polly as we call her, and dance with her. And Polly would get to giggling, you know, and she couldn't make Deborah stop. And Deborah's about, was taller than her and stronger, of course. And she'd get grandmother, or Polly, get used to calling another grandmother, and they'd, you know how you put your feet on somebody else's feet and walk around like that? Mm-hmm. She'd do that with her. And she'd waltz her all up and down the hall and in and out of rooms. And Polly keep telling her to stop it. And Deborah wouldn't. And Polly could tell it was just, you know, this is just perfect. But
I've forgotten that trick.
Yeah, that's right.
But Deborah danced with her. And I introduced a game that we used to play all the time, and it's a card game. And it's called Spit. And of course, it's just utterly wild and insane. And we'd all go in Polly's bedroom and sit on the bed, and this was usually in the evenings when Granddad would be trying to go to bed. You know, and he just kind of calmly floats through all the chaos and just looks at all the women in his room. You know, we just invaded it, not. All of us in our nightgowns and pajamas and sitting on the bed. And he sits there, you know, he takes up kind of one corner and reads while we're on the bed. And we get this card game, and everybody has a deck of cards, and we lay out four stacks, and seven cards in each stack, and then everybody has one card out in front of them. Well, you try to get rid of the cards in front of them, but you can play on anybody's stack, and you can play. You know, if it's an ace, you can play a two or a king, or if it's a six, you can play a five or a seven. And everybody plays at once. You know, so you get about seven girls plus Polly, and it just, you know, just gets louder and louder as everybody screams and says, "I was there first," and you hear people slapping each other's hands and things like that. And Polly was always ready, you know, "Are we gonna play Spit tonight?" She'd get us started. And just, you know, just laugh as hard as anybody. And it just fit. That's why I would, you know, I'd visit them in the summer. And it just, there's always a crowd. And the more people, the better. It's constant. And she keeps things going.
Well, now, how does she take to the Frenchman?
Oh, she's crazy about Dick. She just get real tickled.
Oh, he performed for her.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Everybody got to see Dick in action.
Who was Dick?
That's why
the French.
Not, the French.
She'll
uncle.
Tell you if you just roll up.
When Dick was first going with Libba, Libba taught him how to drive. I think he'd spent until he was about 13. He was in France, and then he came to America. And Libba taught him how to drive. Well, Polly was in the back seat, and my mother, you know, this was just kind of, they all learned to drive like this, the whole family in the car. Just everybody. I mean, my father taught me, and it was, you know, just hectic enough. I'd come home in tears. But Dick was driving, and this was, he'd been driving a while, and he got going down this hill and under a railroad track. And they didn't have a built-up medium. It's just a marked-off medium, you know, where the the pillars kind of for the railroad track. Well, you start heading for one. You know, and just Levin kept hitting me and saying, Dick, Dick, Dick. He just had his hands on the wheel and his eyes fixed on that post right in the, you know, in the middle of the road. And he just said, and Mom and Polly in the back seat were ready to scream. They were hanging on to the front, and Livin kept saying, Dick, Dick. And she finally grabbed the wheel, you know, and pulled it away. He would have hit the thing. But, of course, you know, that always came up. Anytime Dick was there, they never let him live that down.
Oh, really?
Never. especially when Deborah and I or one of the other cousins were learning to drive, that would come up. Did you hear about the time Dick was and just, you know, that was...
Well, what happened? Was he just in a trance?
I guess so. He was just going real fast down the hill. And he just wouldn't turn. He just, you know, kept kind of going catty-corner toward that trestle and just stood there and just, you know, looked at it, stared right ahead. But Livin kept hitting him, saying, Dick, Dick. But he would perform sometimes.
Now, he didn't do that on purpose. He just...
No, now that wasn't on purpose. That was just one of his...
Moments.
Yeah.
Frozen to the wheel.
Yeah. He never did that too much. Pretty often, most of the time, he's pretty much in control of the situation.
Yeah.
Except when he'd get mad. And then he'd just fly in a dozen different directions.
Yeah.
There are two kinds of getting mad, you know. He'd get mad at incompetency or stupidity.
Yeah.
You know.
In
the government.
No.
Our doctors, our motels. Now, I got in my share of this because I used to travel with him, and he was in AAA, and he'd get him, you know, to call ahead and make his reservations, and he'd stop at AAA-approved motels. Well, we stopped in one night on the way out to Colorado, in Lamar, I think it was, and the place had roaches. It also had bed bugs, and Dick saw them. And he just blew up. On these things, you know, none of us came in for it. It was AAA, it was the motel, it was just the little booklets you get that say what motels are in Western motels and all. He'd just go through every one of them. He'd start with that motel, you know, the room, and he'd branch out to the manager, and he'd branch on out to AAA for making the reservations, and then he'd go on to Western hotels for having that motel on the list. He just kind of worked up the list till he got as high as he thought he could go. And then he'd calm down.
And just sustain it.
Yeah,
just keep
going. Well, you know that time I told you he got mad about his pants? When I started thinking about it, I realized it wasn't just Libba who got in trouble for that. He went all the way on to the adoption agency and had a few words to say about their procedures for adoption. Once he got started, it didn't matter, you know, who was involved. The more things he could get mad about, well, he'd just drag each one of them into it. He'd just kind of work up this ladder till he, at that time, you know, it was from the pants to Libba to the trip as a whole, and then the adoption agency that made him come up there in the first place.
Yeah. I can understand that. It kind of accumulates on you.
Yeah.
First thing you know, there's more people to cuss than there not to cuss.
But that's the kind of thing that Polly would get to see, you know. He'd kind of try to control himself when he's visiting people. It didn't work too well, you know, because invariably you'd hear him go off, you know, in the bedroom at night or something. You know. You'd hear him down the hall in their room, and he'd be mad about something. You could just hear this conversation, you know, going on. He'd keep it down, though.
But he was a right easily ignited.
He's pretty
right easily.
I'd say about, on the whole, the times I spent with him, it was at least once every 2 days, and you know, he didn't have to feel bad or anything. Most, I get mad when I'm tired or nervous or something like that. But he didn't. He could just go off at the slightest notice. You know, just.
You mean, I don't associate. I don't think of you would get mad, Suzanne. You just don't show it.
Well, it kind of depends on what I'm mad about.
How do you perform when you get mad?
Well, you could ask Jimmy, he could tell you.
Jimmy?
Yeah, well, there's just, when I was going with Jim, he used to come over to Sears to pick me up for lunch. And we'd go park by the river and have sandwiches.
What did he come to Sears for?
Well, that's where I was working, in that credit office. And there was one girl there, woman, and she was just a bitch. Every time I'd have a run-in with her, Jim would hear about it when he came for lunch, because it would take me at least 15 minutes to calm down. And she was fat, just fat, and, you know, the kind of person, her clothes were so tight you could see the girdle through them. And she had red hair, you know, kind of a coarse, I thought it was a very coarse face.
Yeah.
And she always wore kind of reddish powder, and it stopped right at her jawbone. You know, it was white underneath there and then red up here.
Yeah.
She hated me and I hated her, and we both knew it. She'd come up, I was kind of a menial, and she was in a more exalted state. She was a collector. You know, she'd call people and tell them, remind them that they owed money. And she's one of the better ones, because she could get pretty nasty when she's talking to them. Well, she'd get nasty with anybody. And all I ever did at first was file these credit slips that would come through for the charge accounts. You know, everybody had all these accounts. And I'd stand there and run through the whole alphabet and file these things. And it was just utterly boring. And nothing to it. And the phone would ring, and I'd have to answer phones and get approvals for people who were over their credit limit and wanted to add something on. And what usually started off this business was that we were supposed to have 15-minute breaks, and everybody took a half an hour. Well, you couldn't have everybody go out at the same time, so you'd have to split up the collectors, and you have to split up the filing people, the ones that answer the phones in the back. Because the collectors would get mad if they had to leave their desk and go up and answer a phone. So, one morning, I was working along, and this woman came up. Her name was Sandra. And she said, there's a lady on the phone long distance. Would you take it? And I looked at her. It was my time to go on break. This is... I said, I was going on break. She said, well, I am too. You take the phone. She laughed, you know, and I wasn't in much of a position to argue, so I got on the phone and talked to this woman. It's just, I forgot, I think she wanted her account transferred, and I didn't know anything about transferring accounts. That was this other girl's job. She's the one that handled stuff like that. So I ended up on the phone for about 10 minutes with this lady. And what I had to do was run through some microfilm stuff to check her account to see if we had any of her bills and all this. And this just went on and on forever. And Sandra finally came back after I'd gotten off the phone, and she saw this big pile of filing that hadn't been done because I'd been on the phone for half an hour. And she just raised the roof about these filers, and she looks at me, you know, who won't do their jobs and don't get the filing done until after lunch, you know. I just kind of looked at her, and I didn't say anything right then. I went on my break. But when Jim came at lunch, he got the whole story. He has some elaborations on it too.
You mean Sandra never heard from it?
Well, no.
That's how she gets mad.
That's how I get mad, yeah. Kind of.
Still?
To somebody else.
Yeah. Well, I at that time, I think I'd said something to her about, it wasn't, I could have thought of a lot better things to say after I'd left, but right then it wasn't much of a comeback.
Well, now, the grandmother, all the reporting she does, she never has a personal stake in it. Nothing pinches her.
No, not too often. It never seems that way. A lot of the things she talks about have to do with her, but about the only time I've heard her when she's mad is something about the doctor's office where they started charging to park to go to the doctor. But she doesn't get mad like that. Or she...
See, this other's Freudian. She's not Freudian.
No, yeah, she's not. By the time she ever gets around to telling somebody about it, if she ever was mad, she's not mad anymore. And it's just something to... She'll talk about how mad she was. But
she's
not
mad. Now, you
see,
we haven't cared over any distinctions like that into the countryside. My assumption is that they're not Freudian. They're not pinched in any... in any sense like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can get tired and they can get sick and just natural calamities. It's not social that have that effect. Well, we could look into that and think about it. But now that the Frenchman had a he had a nice command of the language.
Oh, yeah. You see, that's what it was. He never would curse that much, you know, and that sort of thing, profanity. But he would just ride these people, you know, just go on and on. It's kind of like, I was thinking, I'm afraid if I start thinking about it too much, I'll just kind of switch it. But I think it's like Mark Twain. He doesn't have to use profanity when he starts writing about something, just his tone of voice.
Yes,
and
yes.
The way he talks to him, does
yeah,
it.
He'd take it in.
And Dick was intelligent, you know, and he knew what he was talking about, at least as far as I could tell. And he's just the way he would talk, it was just the things he'd say, you know, just showed the other stupidity of whatever was going on.
And language, yeah. The words came to him.
Yeah. He never had any trouble with that.
He could put it all into words.
The only time he'd sputter was just, you know, if he just, sometimes he couldn't find the words or he was a little bit hampered by being at somebody else's house.
Yeah.
then he'd have some troubles. But in his home, you know, he just never had that kind of problem.
Now, Suzanne, this is this thing that you're doing now. That's what Mark Twain lived.
Hmm.
Everywhere he went, he saw things. Now, do you think he was systematic at it, like Radley? See, Faulkner could be just a little bit more pedantic about it. Mark Twain didn't go to school at all.
I never thought of him being systematic about it. He just kind of... It seemed like he just runs into people. You know, and it doesn't matter who it is or what it is. He just... You know, takes hold of it. It may be because I get it through the writing, and that's, you know, it's kind of sounds unstudied, you know, like he just happens to think of this fellow and goes into him.
Well, now the writing, you can see, I haven't, you know, I haven't looked too closely at it. But one of the most interesting things I noticed about Innocence, see, that's his first book, mm-hmm. book-length thing, is he put those sketches together. And you could take them as a guide on how to write paragraphs. He makes a statement and works it out. It's right mechanical in that sense. Is if he's got that far in learning how to write. But see, in Roughing It, he's way past that. He didn't write no more paragraphs.
Yeah.
But he goes through that. So now you see, he did that by himself. He had no mentor. No. Or he talked to some of the people. But,
I was thinking, talk to Howells, but I don't think Howells was much of a mentor, really. You know, I don't. I've read some of that William Dean Howells' works, and it did just absolutely nothing. It seemed like nothing in common with Twain at all.
Yeah. Just, you know, I thought about this after you left the other day. You said you just keep waiting for Mr. Weaver, Ms. Guthrie, just to add one or two more touches.
Yeah.
They've cast so far, and that is. Old man, that Sam Turner, you see, she has never taken hold of him. She's been on the point of taking hold of Ms. Turner. She does take the boy Curtis. But he doesn't wear any sort of shoes or boots, you see, and you don't have any view of him at all, not the slightest. Now, I noticed that yesterday, Miss Daisy, she performed a right skillful. We were talking about Ms. Guthrie's hair grass. And she said her problem was nut grass. And the only way to handle that, she found up at where she works, they pull it up, fill a bushel basket, and take it over on the trash, and they burn it. That's, people don't even trust her. Piece of dead nut grass if it ever dies. Insurance man. Now, she passed over the word insurance man so fast, unless you knew it pretty well, you'd miss it. Insurance man said, Miss Daisy, you can, all it takes, one good deal the next morning will bring that all back to life. She went ahead with the insurance man, relating what he said. Now that shows, you see, a considerable skill, and she did it with great ease. If we could get her to transfer that to Francis Presley or Preacher Taylor, well, she did do that a little bit for Preacher Taylor.
Yeah.
But she won't do that methodically. She just does it family when it comes to a fate.
Oh, it seems, you know, you don't expect it.
I was thinking, see, you were telling, reporting on the Frenchman. And as I thought about it later, I didn't quite see the structure of your reporting. Now, I picked up a little structure, say, from Ms. Rawlins, but it came to me hard. It didn't come to me naturally. I didn't realize for a long time, you see, that the census is a sort of structure in itself. And I had gone the rounds with Ms. Glisson And I had come home and set down everything she said. I had tried to take hold of it, see.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a long time before I realized that Ms. Rawlins was using the senses as a sort of a structure. See, she made a statement about Zelma.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went around. And it was nice. And I saw that long ago, and you've heard me say that, maybe. I have not seen it carry over from reading literature with any student I ever had, whether they were bright students or not. The artistic sense or the sense of structure, I have never yet seen it carry over. And I think Faye is she perceptive and sees things, you know, for herself. She's got no feeling for that at all. Just none. Now it may be I listened to your tape after that night. I didn't look for that. I just listened to it. And there may be one there.
If it's there, I don't think I'm in. When I talk like that, when I get through, then I can think about what I've said and think how I would do it differently, you know, to give it a structure. Because, I mean, most of the time it doesn't have one. It's pretty haphazard. Just, you know, things that I
would do something. Yes, it's nice to have just a little,
yeah,
little feeling, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. What?
Tell her to bring her scissors in.
Little scissors that you can get under the knot, and you need tweezers and stuff to get them out. And maybe that girl down there, Mike, can talk to my him. I don't, you know, he went out there, Carl, took them right in, take it out, and got two shapes.
Say, sit down a little bit. Maybe you can see whether it should have been out 2-3 days.
That's why I'm there embedded, though. I wouldn't try it. You have to, if they get embedded and you don't have what you've got to get them out.